and they aren't making enough money, and they don't feel like they're, you know, there's income loss. Do you get involved? Did the PSC get involved in that at all at that point? Or is that purely part of the lease agreement?
No, if there's issues with the reclaimed lands, if a landowner or somebody farming the reclaimed lands have a complaint, they can complain to us, but we've heard very few of those type of complaints.
Okay. I think this is my last question for you, Jim. Do you, in your opinion, do the mining companies need additional incentives to encourage them to bond release?
You know, looking at some
incentives, meaning maybe penalties or some sort of a, or, you know, they testified that the bond, the cost of the bond is their incentive, and that it's a pretty good one. It's motivating. Is that, do you believe that that's the case, or have you and your staff thought that maybe in some cases there should be additional incentive or requirements put on that to kind of get that after the 10 years, encourage them to speed that up and finish and release those bonds?
Well, for the active mines, the way the bond is calculated based on the worst-case reclamation condition, that generally keeps going up as time goes on. It can go the other way, but generally goes up. So there again, when you have when there's a lot of reclaimed lands there really isn't any additional bond for that. I personally thought the idea of that, looking at lands that have been reclaimed, and particularly those that have been ceded for the 10 years or more, if they're not under bond release, that we possibly add some additional amount to the bond for those areas. It provide some incentive mm-hmm. for that. It's something thought about. It's nothing we've proposed. I know that the costs of if companies have surety bond, that is expensive. That adds additional costs, but I think something like that would provide an incentive, because if they don't, they're otherwise paying more for bond.
Mm-hmm. And would there be possible fallout on the other side of with landowners, you know, who, like you were saying, kind of like having the bond as a hook to make sure that they're getting the productivity that they want?
You know, that could be too. There's a lot of times when you do what you do, there's sometimes positive and sometimes negative mm-hmm. consequences. So,
yeah. Okay, that's all my questions. Thanks, Jim.
Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Jim. Just a couple things. You literally have written the book on reclamation standards. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say that I am, not entirely, but I've been involved in writing the book.
So it's an evolving process, correct?
It has been, although a lot of the standards have been pretty constant for quite a few years now. But as mentioned before, with our revegetation success standards, there is some need to update that, and it's something that's been on our to-do list for several years now. But with some of the permitting activities, and as you know, we had some other lawsuits that took a lot of time. It's just something that we haven't gotten done, particularly that we rely on the NRCS quite a bit for our revegetation standards, and they've come up with some new technical guides, and we need to get those incorporated into that. And plus, there's been some changes in farming practices, particularly in the cropland. Some of what we have in there implies that you have some of all lands, and that is no longer the case. That's pretty much gone away completely in the last.
Do you find it interesting, Jim, that the coal mining has such strict reclamation standards, where wind farms and certain pipelines have zero reclamation standards?
Well, I think the difference with this is because of the federal law and regulations. As you know, In fact, I brought these up for a reason. If it came to that, you know, the law and rules we have, there's two books here that are pretty lengthy, and these requirements are pretty prescriptive as far as what has to be done there. And if we want to change any of our rules, those have to be approved by OSM, and they have to make it a finding that those changes would be as effective as the counterpart federal regulations.
Okay, and just one last clarification, more for I guess for me than anything, Jim, is in the order which we issued on October 22nd, 2014, page 6, the top paragraph, and I'll just read it. In the future, the applicant may exercise an option in the lease obtained from the building owners to purchase the buildings. Could you walk me through? I mean, I'm just trying to clarify. Do we have to be notified on that if that exercise has happened? It's in our order. I remember having this discussion, but I wanted just to walk through it one more time.
Well, the mining companies are required to not conduct any operations within 500 feet of an occupied dwelling. And then the actual core removal operations cannot come in within 500 feet of any farm building. And I think this particular language about the exercising an option to purchase the buildings, I'm assuming that was language that was in Coyotes Creek's permit, that they put that in the permit themselves. I'd have to go into the permit and verify that, but I believe that's the case.
I looked into the Exhibit 1, the lease itself, and it talks about page 4. Says it reinforces what we put in the order, however you want to look at it. But I was just curious, does the PSC need to be notified if that happens, or is that something we just put in the order, or is that something we require notification on?
I think it's something we would want to be aware of. Because if they do exercise that option, then the mining operations could come within 500 feet of that occupied dwelling, and they otherwise have to maintain a identified buffer zone to stay back at least 500 feet.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. No more questions.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have no questions.
Okay. Mr. Broughton?
Nothing further.
Okay. Mr. Biello?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Commissioner Chrisman? Commissioner Fedorchak? Okay. Commissioner Kalk, you good? All right. Thank you. You can step down. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, anything further?
Nothing further. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, I know there's been public testimony offered at the end of the first day. Are there any other individuals who wish to offer testimony who haven't already been given the opportunity in this case? Okay, we got one. Is there anybody out there who had intended to offer testimony? So just the one. I think before we do that, we'll just take a. We've been going for quite a while. Or do you want?
Let's just go.
You want to just go? All right. You can come on up. Fine by me.
If one turns into.
It doesn't matter at this point.
Are you okay to continue without a break?
3 hours is way too long. Yeah, but. If it's not going to be long, let's just do it.
All right. Fair enough. Sir, can I get your name?
Michael Thyberg.
And Mr. Thyberg, I need to give you the same oath. I need to advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It's a Class C felony punishable by maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Okay, you can go ahead with your testimony.
I have a farm. I'm not associated with the Voight situation across the river. I live on, or I have a farm west of the current Falkirk coal mining operation in the path of the future coal mining. My farm was homesteaded by my grandfather. I'm third owner 131 years ago. And so I have some concern in that area of losing all of the Centennial Farms and so forth. My first item that I would like to discuss would be the surface mining royalty that was discussed by your first witness this morning, by North American Coal, the loss of income. The current 3 cents a ton for the surface owner is supposedly paid, and that is supposed to cover the loss of production, loss of income during the mining operation. In my case, over the previous few years, coal mine has come in and done several sets of test holes, and I have requested their results or their printouts that they have gotten. On one of them, there was a handwritten calculation by Falkirk Mine of how much coal was underneath each one of the two quarters that are in question. It amounts to about 2.5 million ton per quarter. At 3 cents a ton, when it is eventually mined, that's going to be $75,000. For a quarter at 160 acres, that amounts to, I think it's $468 or something like that, an acre. That is essentially the gross income for 1 year. And they're going to be in what they call mining operation for 10 years. So that 3 cents a ton might have been acceptable 30, 40 years ago. But of now, that amounts to maybe $50 an acre return as your token of loss income, until they get back out of the mining and get back into the reclamation. Falkirk Mining is holding land that's been in their hands for 35 years. They're buying most of it if they can, and only leasing under the worst conditions, if just to be able to mine it. Coal royalty payments, the 10 to 12 cents per ton that my folks signed for back in the 60s, represented about 5 to 6% value of what that coal would have, what the power plants would have had to pay for that coal. The leases were 20 years, subject to 20-year renewal. Well, that's gone through the process, and we're within 5 miles, or I'm within a mile, of the coal mining operation, and so is Perpetual at this point. So there's nothing you can do. Today, that same 12 cents per ton royalty represents approximately 0.6% of the value of the coal sold to the power plant. 10 times less, or 1/10 of what it did 40, 50 years ago. North Dakota imposes a coal severance tax of 37.5 cents a ton. Why does North Dakota get over 3 times more in taxes than I get for my coal? Just a question I'd like answered. If the lignite coal royalties had been adjusted for inflation, which they weren't at the time my folks signed the lease and stuff, they were without legal representation. There were no public hearings. It was each man for himself, and most of them lost out. If they were realistic, the royalty rates would be approximately $1.20 a ton now. And that's not realistic. When you look at, compared to the older oil well royalties of 1/8 or 12.5%, or now the newer ones going as high as 1/4 share, 25%. That pales at something less than 1%. Something's way off kilter here. Needs to be changed as far as into, maybe you need to be considering BTUs or you know, some other measure. Owners of the coal in North Dakota are getting really ripped off. Federally owned mine mineral rights, royalty payment rates are $2.25 an acre. Why is the Fed's rate $2.25 an acre and the co-owner rights, mineral rights, local mineral owner rights only 12 cents an acre or 10, 12, 13, whatever it happens to be? Reclamation. Current method of reclamation has improved substantially, I would say, over the years, that since 74, since they've started out in my area mining or Walker coal mine. But over the first 5 to 10 years, it still settles unevenly. You've addressed somewhat of the packing problems of when you're putting back the subsoil, going away from the scraper and hauling it in, but you still get irregular compaction. That's leveled. The topsoil is put on. You plant grass. And 5, 10 years from down the road, the shelter belts, the coal, or the snow that was buried in the pits at the time the pits were refilled, the farmsteads that were pushed in, all of that debris tends to rot or decompose. Areas become that were compacted, or you know, somewhat become less compacted. But anyway, the surface of the topsoil becomes very uneven, maybe 1 or 2 feet differences in very short length, 50, 60 feet, 20 feet down the field, making it very hard for larger equipment for harvesting. I maintain that sometime in the reclamation process, maybe at year 5 or something, should come in and check the level of the land. And you cannot go back and grade it, because if you graded the high spots into the low spots, you wouldn't have any topsoil left on the high spots. So the topsoil needs to be hauled in to fill the low spots because of settling. The other thing that happens during the mine reclamation or during the pre-mining is that all the topsoil is removed in one lift. Your organic matter is up in the top few inches of the soil. That's where your plants grow in. And so by mixing that top 6 inches with the other 18 inches or a foot or whatever topsoil you have, and then commingling it and then spreading it on, you end up with very little organic matter being spread on at the time. This is, I think, one of the biggest problems we have in the redefining or getting the productivity back up on mine land. That, I think, the topsoil should be brought, taken off on two lifts, or 3 lifts total, with take down to the 5 foot level, the subsoil, the lower topsoil, and then the top 6 inches with the organic matter in. I think that would resolve that. The other thing is after the reclamation is done, grass is planted, and As soon as that's established, it is leased out to farmers to harvest that grass, with just narrow strips of grass left for holding snow. But the growth is hauled off. I think probably in the first 5 years or the first a certain period of time, this material should be mulched to be put back into the topsoil to try to regain the organic matter at a faster rate. Bond release. I think Falkirk Mine is acquiring land for alternate use. The Falkirk Mining Company continues to add land to existing surface mine permit. With land ownership now on approximately, 35,000-40,000 acres to date. Almost half of the land allocated for the Falkirk Mining Company mining operation is not mined and is dedicated to local auxiliary facilities and operations. That's that gray area around there where they are actually mining.
And this permit relates to the Kyle Creek mine, and I don't know if you're asserting that these same things are going to occur, but the testimony needs to be relevant to the particular hearing, and that relates to Kyle Creek's mine in this case. So,
okay,
go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is more or less the Falkirk mine operation, where the Falkirk mine owns the land, buys the land. Their first return on the bonded in 2012, the Falkirk Mining Company released about 217 acres of land that was mined from 1983 to 1989, returning it to its original agricultural use. This was the first piece of land to return to its original use since Falkirk Mining started mining the area 35 years ago. So for some reason in Falkirk, it has taken an extremely long time to turn any of this land back over to the originally displaced farmers. That's about the only comments I got.
Okay. Just sit tight for a minute. I'll see if anybody has any questions for you. Okay. Mr. Broughton?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Biello?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, Your Honor. Okay.
Commissioner Chrisman?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak? Commissioner Kolk?
Just one, sir. Could you give us your exact address?
2912 8th Street Southwest, Washburn.
All right, thank you, sir.
North Dakota, 58577.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can step down. I think that was it. Is there anybody else? Sure. Come, you need to come on up and be sworn in.
Let's try and stay on Otter Creek, though.
Pardon?
Let's try and stay on Otter Creek.
Can you state your name, sir?
My name is Eugene Wirtz.
Okay,
I'm from Underwood, North Dakota.
Okay. Mr. Wirtz, I'm required to give you the oath and advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It's a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000. Maximum 5 years imprisonment or both, and being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Go ahead.
I think there's been a lot of discussion about farmers not coming forward and saying what's going on, because a lot of the local farmers are farming this land, and there's a reason why farmers don't say much and why they don't call Jim Deutsch and complain. It's because if you do complain and you were leasing land from the mine, you will get that land taken away.
I'm going to object to this line of testimony. He's not testifying to his own particular experience. This is all hearsay.
No, this is my own experience. This is my own experience.
Okay. And it's at Falkirk Mine.
Yes, it's at Falkirk Mine, but it happens everywhere.
So I think this testimony should be...
The testimony does need to be relevant to the particular mining permit that's at issue, the Kyle Creek mine.
I think it's pertinent in the sense that if you want an actual realistic evaluation of how things are going in a certain area, there are reasons why it doesn't happen.
I'll overrule it. I'll allow brief testimony to the extent that you're asserting,
okay,
based on your experience, these things have occurred and they may be relevant to this permit. You can go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I used to farm land that ended up being bought by Falkirk Mine. I rented it before from a landowner. I was a neighbor. My neighbor and I gave a complaint to the Public Service Commission, to Jim Deutsch, and I think Englerth was in the office at that time. And we contended that the mine didn't have a right to do something. They didn't have a right to go through our township. They didn't have permits to go through our township roads. That road caved in when my neighbor was driving across it. Had he been driving across it at a faster speed, he could have been seriously hurt, maybe even killed. We filed the complaint. The PSC found that we were correct. Afterwards, I got a notice from the Falkirk Mine that I would no longer be renting their land from them. And I had rented it for about 4 or 5 years. So that is my contention. I have the letter from Falkirk Mine, and let me tell you, they had to come to our township supervisors and get a permit. And they were asked, one of our supervisors for our township asked, why did you take that land away? They said, we do not rent land to people that don't help our mining operation. So that is why nobody's going to say anything and complain to the PSC, because if they do and it's found out, they will not be renting land. And some of these people were very dependent. I only had 80 acres. I wasn't dependent on it, thank God. But there are a lot of people that are held hostage by these mines because they either have to rent from them because their grandparents or somebody else who owned the land made agreements that they were not party to. That's basically what I wanted to say.
Okay. Mr. Broughton?
No, thank you.
Mr. Biello?
Just to renew my objection, that was hearsay again on other people, and it pertains to Falkirk Mine, not the Kyle Creek Mine.
Thank hearsay. You.
It was noted. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
I have no questions.
All right. Commissioner Christman?
No other questions.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
No.
Commissioner Kolk?
Sure, just a couple. Mr.
Sure.
Work, can you give work, maybe you did this. Can you give me spell your first name and your last name with your complete address? You maybe gave it, but I want to make sure I have it.
No, I didn't, actually. My official name is Eugene Wirtz. I go by Gene normally. My address is 3420.
Please spell your last name, sir.
W-I-R-T-Z.
Okay, official address?
3423 3rd Street Northwest, Underwood, North Dakota.
Thank you, sir. And just a general time frame when you would have given this complaint to the PSC. I'm just trying to – was this last year? Was this 20 years ago? Was it?
No, this was – I don't know. It would be in the records. The PSC fined Falkirk Mine.
No, I mean, you must know – just give me a range here.
I'm guessing 15 years ago.
Hang on.
What year?
No, just wait. Your testimony – it's okay. Your testimony to the best of your ability – those in the public need to be quiet, and if not, they need to go ahead and step outside. If you want to testify, you'll have the opportunity, but otherwise, no statements from the crowd. So, go ahead.
You know, I'd have to think about it. I mean, Falkirk would have the records. The PSC would have the records when we filed the citizen's complaint.
Was it before or after 2000?
I think it was before.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You can step down. Any other members of the public wish to offer any testimony? Okay. Mr. Broughton, do you have any closing statement or closing remarks?
Well, we had a pre-hearing conference, and at that point, I believe that we had agreed that we would do written closing statements, and Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco also suggested that Mr. Biel and I also submit proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law And so my request and suggestion would be to try and set a deadline for submitting those things and the late-filed exhibit we discussed earlier.
No deadline was discussed at the pre-hearing conference for submitting those documents?
No, but the pre-hearing conference, we didn't think we'd have 3 days, a week or two apart either.
Okay. I guess, do you have a thought on what your preference would be with respect to a time frame? And then I'll allow the others to chime in on that. Six weeks for the transcript, you said? Okay.
This may cross the line to a work session question, but isn't there some statute that within 30 days of after this hearing that we have to do something? And I understand there's a lot of things that could happen here, but I recall that from some discussion somewhere.
No, there has to be the commission is required by law to have a ruling within 30 days after the close of the hearing. But I guess I know there's been some other cases where there's been other filings, whatever required to be, once those are submitted, I think the commission would have the 30 days after that to issue its ruling.
When this has come up before, the hearing simply hasn't closed until these filings are in.
Okay. So we can...
Okay, no, that's key, Alan. I just want to make sure I understood when that clock started.
Yes, well... It depends what the hearing officer says, but in the past we have kind of worked it out that way.
Okay. So, Mr. Biella, your thoughts?
Well, I would assume we would probably want the transcript. Derek, would you agree to that?
Yeah, I would.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Yes, but I'm not producing these documents right to file, but yes, I would expect they'd want the transcript.
Well, I don't know that we necessarily can set a date certain on the time frame for submission of the proposed findings because it is contingent upon receiving the transcript that will allow the parties to produce their proposed findings. So, Mr. Broughton, what do you propose for how long after you receive the transcript, how long do you need to prepare your proposed findings?
I'm open to disagreement. I'm just throwing this out there, but I was going to say 3 weeks.
Okay. I'll see what Mr. Biella says.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. What do we discuss 3 weeks after the transcript?
Correct.
That's fine.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
That's good with me.
Okay. And then the other matter, late-filed exhibit, is it my understanding that the two reports that were you wanted as late-filed exhibits have now been entered into evidence? Is that not correct?
No, there's one that we did receive. It was not entered into evidence.
Right. There's one you received, there's one upstairs, and there's the photos, and I'm sure we can...
All right, and that was something that the parties were going to get together on and work out and see whether or not they even had to be submitted as late-filed exhibits, so there may not be any late-filed exhibits.
Right, but that'll be done. I think that could be done next week.
Go ahead, Mr. Biella.
Well, there was the one that Commissioner Kalk had requested. The report by Mr. Bickle, all of the data that was pertinent to that was requested, so we agreed to submit that as a late file exhibit.
And I certainly
that was fine. It was Coyote Creek's exhibit number 13. You were to supplement that with a complete exhibit E to that exhibit. Is that what you're referring
yes
to? Okay. Yeah. So that will be, I guess that will be a late filed exhibit for certain, and then there potentially could be other late filed exhibits once you've once counsel have met with advisory staff. So,
and just one further, with respect to the closing statement, are they to be? Is Mr. Broughton to go first, and we follow, or what? What is the thought there?
Well, was that addressed at the pre-hearing conference?
It was not, and right now I'm fine with whatever Mr. Biella would like to do.
Well, okay. What do you propose?
Well, my perception of this closing statement is really a brief.
Yeah.
So typically in these scenarios like this, with their side being the applicant, the proponent of the measure, that they would file their brief, and then we'd have like 10 days after to file ours, something like that.
Comfortable with that, Mr. Broughton?
Yeah.
Okay. So you'll file your brief simultaneous with your proposed findings of fact 3 weeks after receiving the transcript?
That sounds fine.
Then Mr. Biella will have 10 days after that to file his response?
That's fine with me.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, any concerns or questions?
Only if the company's findings be coming in, I mean, with the brief, or, okay, that's fine, as long as it's all clear.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Any other procedural issues to address?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Broughton, anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, thank you.
Okay. How about closing comments from the commissioners? Commissioner Christman?
Well, not a lot of closing comments, except for that obviously we have a lot of information to review here. I've certainly appreciated all the information. I think it's certainly been a learning experience. And I look forward to reviewing this. I appreciate everybody's patience and answering a lot of questions during these 3 days. And I look forward to seeing the closings from the attorneys and their findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Sure. I had a New Year's resolution to read 12 books in the next coming year, and I think I just have to put that off for a month or two while I read the, I don't know, 12 books that were supplied to me today. So thank you for that. No, in all seriousness, I know this is a sensitive matter. It's an important matter to every party. And my commitment to look at all the materials thoroughly and be as, you know, fair as possible in dealing with the jurisdiction that we have. There were issues brought up that we have no jurisdiction over. And so... Well, I can understand some of the frustrations. There are just simply things the PSC can't control. But I think that everyone exhibited a lot of patience and professionalism and thoroughness. And we'll do our very best to get a good decision as expeditiously as possible. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just kind of to echo what both my colleagues have said, just thank everyone for the work and the patience and the decorum. I think I talked about when we first started this thing about the infamous Cooperstown Wind hearing where people were literally fighting in a hallway, and nothing good comes of that. And whatever decision this commission comes to, somebody's going to be upset. And the thing is that you're going to have to live together and work together, and that's the big thing is we're going to do our best to make the best decision we can. You've given us a lot of information to look through, and I appreciate that. But just the end of the day, remember, we're all neighbors here. We're all going to need to work together and live together when this is all said and done. So just thank you all very much for your effort and for staying with this this hearing process.
Okay. Thank you. And that will conclude testimony for today. The hearing, the record will remain open until receipt of the transcript and the proposed findings and the briefs from the parties. Thank you.